thing. And then I'm going to go, now there's so many pictures, I have to go find Amber. And the first opening song we have is Materno by Grieg, and it's performed by Amber.
Oh my gosh, that was so beautiful. And thank you so much, Amber. Well, good morning and welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. My name is Rachel Long. My pronouns are she and her. I've been a member of Prairie for 26 years and I currently serve as Prairie's president. Prairie aspires to be an open-hearted and an open-minded congregation. We strive to be welcoming to all, though we recognize that we all have biases that limit our understanding of how others may perceive us. We stumble in our efforts, but we commit to keep trying to grow our ability to love people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, family structure, age, or abilities. During our virtual coffee hour at the end of the service, we invite visitors, guests, and returning friends to introduce yourselves so that we might get to know you better. We will also have joys and concerns at that time, and then we will move into our congregational meeting. We have a few announcements. See the order of service, which was emailed to Prairie News for more information and links. I want to start by wishing everyone a very happy Mother's Day. Those of you who are mothers or have mothers or had mothers, we wish you the best today. And thank you for joining us even on Mother's Day. Tomorrow night at 7 p.m., our study group will have the first of two discussions on how to be an anti-racist by Dr. Ibram Kendi, and that discussion will be led by Barb Park. Thursday fun night this week is at 6:30 p.m., and everyone is welcome to attend, even though the main focus is for our youngest prairie folks. The Prairie Sing-Along is this Thursday at 7 p.m. Advanced Virtual Dungeons and Dragons is Friday, and the beginner version is on Saturday. Next Sunday is the annual Prairie Reads service, so bring your favorite book recommendations, and more information will be coming out on Prairie News. On Sunday, May 23rd, is our annual parish meeting. The May Prairie Fire newsletter has the agenda, which also went out on Prairie News, and please plan to attend. The chalice lighting today is Why We're Here by Eric Walker Wickstrom and read by Margaret.
That's an essential part of it. My name is Margaret Moses. My pronouns are she, her, and hers. Here today, in this place, and with these people, may we listen so that we can hear. May we hear so that we can feel. May we feel so that we can know. And may we know so that we can change ourselves and this world. May this chalice we light our way.
Thank you. And please feel free to light your own chalice at home. We will now have a time of silent meditation, starting and ending with the chime. The story for all ages today is called The Invisible String by Patrice Karst.
Welcome, everyone, to the story for all ages. If we haven't met yet, my name is Matt Aspen, soon to be Reverend Matt, and I have been selected by your nominating committee to potentially be your new minister. I sure do hope that happens. Because I've spent the last couple of weeks getting to know you, and I almost feel like we are connected by some invisible string. Oh, you don't know what an invisible string is? I just happen to have a story right here called The Invisible String. Let's check this out. This book is dedicated to the children of the world and to the magic of their strings. Lisa and Jeremy, the twins, were asleep one calm and quiet night. Suddenly, it began to rain very hard. Thunder rumbled until it got so loud that it woke them up. "Mommy, Mommy," they cried out as they ran to her. "Don't worry, you two. It's just the storm making all that noise. Go back to bed." "We want to stay close to you," said Jeremy. "We're scared." Mom said, "You know we're always together no matter what." "But how can we be together when you're out here and we're in bed?" said Lisa. Mom held something right in front of them and said, "This is how." Rubbing their sleepy eyes, the twins came closer to see what Mom was holding. "I was about your age when my mom first told me about the invisible string." "I don't see a string," said Jeremy. "You don't need to see the invisible string. People who love each other are always connected by a very special string made of love." "But if you can't see it, how do you know it's there?" asked Lisa. "Even though you can't see it with your eyes, you can feel it with your heart and know that you are always connected to everyone you love. When you're at school and you miss me, Your love travels all the way along the string until I feel the tug on my heart. And when you tug it right back, we feel it in our hearts, said Jeremy. Does Jasper the cat have an invisible string? Lisa asked. She sure does, said Mom. And best friends like me and Lucy, asked Lisa. Best friends too. How far can this string reach? Anywhere and everywhere, Mom said. Would it reach me if I were a submarine captain deep in the ocean, asked Jeremy. Yes, Mom said, even there. The jungle explorer, Lisa asked, even there. How about an astronaut out in space? Yes, even there. Does the string go away when you're mad at us? Never, said Mom. Love is stronger than anger, and as long as your love is in your heart, the string will always be there. Even when you get older and can't agree about things like what movie to see or what game to play in the back seat or what time to go to bed. Oh, that's right. You two should be in bed. And with that, they all laughed as Mom chased the twins back to their beds. Within a few minutes, they were asleep, even though the storm was still making the same loud noises outside. As they slept, they started dreaming of all the invisible strings they have, and all the strings their friends have, and their friends have, and their friends have, until everyone in the world was connected by invisible strings. And from deep inside, they now could clearly see no one is ever alone. I hope you enjoyed this story. I look forward to visiting with you as this day continues on. Blessed be.
Before we go on, Matt, could you turn your microphone up?
That was pre-recorded, so it sounds different.
So our presentation today is What Do You See? By Matt Aspen, which relates to our seventh principle, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Matt Aspen earned his Master's of Divinity degree from Meadville Lombard Theological School. He was granted preliminary fellowship by the Ministerial Fellowship Committee and will soon be ordained in his home congregation in West Seattle, Washington. He is currently residing in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and is serving as the interim director of religious exploration for the Auburn UU Fellowship in Alabama, where he will be serving remotely for the remainder of the 2021 church year. He is currently a candidate for Prairie's contract minister position for the 21-22 church year. And everyone, please welcome Matt and help him feel at home.
Good to be with you all today. Hopefully you can hear me a little bit better than you could on that recording. Good. All right. So I'm a fairly thoughtful, somewhat strategic person. When your search committee originally proposed that I visit with you on May 2nd, I had a conflict. And then quickly agreed without giving it too much thought to instead deliver a message to you today, May 9th, Mother's Day. Which for some is one of the most emotionally charged, high expectation, prone to disappointment days on the entire calendar. Mix in a presentation by me about who knows what, followed by a vote by you all to decide whether or not to call me as your minister, a topic which itself clearly has a long and often highly charged history in this fellowship. There's nothing like adding a little bit more pressure to an already stressful situation, right? Well, as they say, it's pressure that makes diamonds. Having no idea what I would end up talking to you about today, I offered Renee as generic a title as I could muster, calling this talk, What Do You See? I'm grateful to be here with you today, a day that has been set aside to honor the source of us all. And I've been grateful for the time we've spent together over this past few weeks, as I've tried to develop a better understanding of what each of you sees as you consider the future you collectively want to help birth into this topsy-turvy world we find ourselves living within. Motherhood is a loaded concept in our society. There have been and continue to be unachievable and often conflicting expectations cast upon women throughout history. There are burdens that have not always been validated or even marginally supported. There's an idolizing of this role, and then the judgment that comes when comparisons are made against unattainable images of perfection. In some ways, motherhood actually shares some similarities with ministry. The job is big, the expectations are high, the judgments can be swift, and the actions taken in relationship can have long-term consequences, for better or for worse. Perhaps, I got thinking, it might be safer for me to talk about motherhood and ministry and how those images inform our future in more general terms. If we step away from the binary language of mother and father, of minister and lady, if we shift the focus away from the individual and move instead into discussion of what our shared hopes for how these larger relationships might be, perhaps the discussion might feel a little bit less risky all around. What are your hoped for outcomes from these types of supportive relationships? Be they with family, through long-lasting friendships, or within this chosen community? What do you see? From what I've seen so far, Prairie definitely feels to me as though it strives to hold many of the ideals of the best that we might hope a family to be. Always there for each other, trying to lead by example, working intentionally to become a safe place to try new things towards becoming our higher selves. A place that tries to model what your ancestors and you have learned is necessary to thrive in this sometimes frightening, but always miraculous existence we have somehow emerged into. I've seen what this community is able to achieve when you are finally able to come to some level of consensus on a thing. The spaces you have built are amazing and are waiting to re-embrace you and become the launching pads for your next set of dreams once we're able to finally safely reconvene again, hopefully in the not too distant future. That new building and the staffing additions you are opening yourself up to could not have come at a more pivotal time in human history. While there is nothing constant but change, there are at least two major shifts happening in society right now, which are causing a great deal of anxiety within most of us. The first is a shared awareness of the very real possibility that humans are headed towards an ecological disaster of our own creation. As with most human-created crises, we've seen this one coming for at least as long as I've been alive. Yet we've been unable to collectively muster the will to change our behaviors enough to do anything about it. Second major challenge we face, held up in stark relief over the course of the past two presidential elections, is a profound fracturing of our society into deeper divides between who is an us and who is a them. A dynamic that has led us to the weakening of the unspoken social bonds which used to bring us together to tackle whatever challenges the world placed in our way. Whether we're willing to admit it or not, I think more and more of us are becoming genuinely afraid of what the future might hold. We can all sense that we've been going in the wrong direction for a long time, but structures that get baked into a society by time and tradition can be very hard to unseat. Our Unitarian Universalist faith tells us that despite the odds against us, we must try. I remember when I discovered Unitarian Universalism and made my first steps into my home congregation. Early on, it was the people that drew me in. but it was ultimately the intentionally idealistic hope of the thing that really engaged my spirit. Our sixth principle, the nearly unimaginable goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. For our fourth principle, the idea that finding truth and meaning was a responsibility that rested upon each of us, and that that quest could be best supported within the safety of an intentional community. A community that assigned inherent worth and value to each contributor and recognized that each of us was part of a larger and more interdependent whole. Sign me up. This faith is designed to intentionally move us, both individually and collectively, to the creation of a more just, equitable, and healthy society. It felt as though I had found my home. I can still think of few other places in the world designed to do what this faith is striving to do. And then you see a community like this. And just like a family, sometimes it delivers on its promises in glorious ways. Its community members band together, overcome their apparent differences, see a collective tomorrow that feels better than the identified challenges of the day, and new possibilities are brought into existence. And other times, it doesn't. And in those moments, it can break our hearts. Because we have each at some level bought into the ideals of this unconventional faith. We've devoted ourselves to its vision. We've invested our time and talent and treasures towards bringing its best ideas to life. And in the process, it has become a part of who we are. It's that last part. The concept that this place has become a part of who you are that informs the approach I will take if you invite me to serve as your minister for this next stretch. And I sense that's why, after 50 years of in success and undoubted heartbreaks, each of you keep showing up. Prairie has become a part of who you are. There is something larger here. I've begun to find it in your shared stories. I'm so glad you've captured all that you did in those books, a labor of love if ever there was one. You have created a roadmap of your journey to this point and shared much for future generations to learn from. You should be proud of all that you've already accomplished. And in many conversations, I've already gotten to glimpse some of that well-earned pride. You've done it your own way. And in doing so, you have discovered many ways of being that have served you well. And now, as always, there's a generation of new humans seeking guidance on how to navigate this beautiful but unflinching world we have glimpsed. And they have glimpsed at what you have done and said, I think they might have been onto something. I think I would be well served to become a part of this. The strength of our faith is that while it strives to retain the lessons of the past, it is also designed to adapt and grow, just as all life is naturally wired to do. I view religion and religious community as an integral part of our human survival mechanisms. Right or wrong, God-based or not, conservative or liberal, with access to power or completely marginalized, communities that have practiced some form of religion have continued to survive and thrive since the dawn of human awareness. There must be something there. Today, the role of religion in society is being challenged. For as much good has been done in the world under the banner of religion,
hold tight, everyone. I think his screen just froze.
We are quickly learning that just as much.
Your screen froze like for 15 seconds. So I don't know if you want to go back and
okay.
Last thought.
Where was I? Well, I'll just start here. I said, today, the role of religion in society is being challenged. For as much good as is being done in the world under the banner of religion, we are quickly learning that just as much harm, and perhaps far more, has also been and continues to be perpetrated under this umbrella. Do we even need this archaic concept anymore? Last I checked, we still need all the things I listed about extended family above. We still need safe spaces that nourish us, connect us, and accept us for who we are as we work to identify our strengths and determine what unique contributions to the collective good each of us is best positioned to take. We need the tenets of our unique and storied faith tradition today more than ever. I genuinely believe that Unitarian Universalism has the potential to be a source of the solutions we need to face the next challenges we see on the horizon, but it won't just happen on its own. Sometimes we all just need a bit of assistance to keep us pointed in the right direction. Humans and human logic are brilliant, useful, and completely fallible. Smart as we have become, we are still evolving and clearly still have a good ways to go. One moment I'll never forget during my ministerial formation came during my career assessment, which is essentially an intensive 2-day psych eval to verify my fitness for the challenges of ministry. At the end of this grueling adventure, I received an assessment from the very wise psychiatrist that I had spoken with at length at several times throughout the process. She said, "You are one of the more self-aware people I have ever seen come through here." Starting to feel good. "But be careful. It's the most self-aware people that have the biggest blind spots because they can't imagine having missed anything big at the end of all their examinations." I've spent pretty much every day since that interaction trying to turn lights towards these blind spots. It has been quite illuminating. And I treasure this ever-expanding insight that my perspective, no matter how well-informed, by default, is severely limited. I think it's safe to say that this perspective now forms the foundation for my entire approach to ministry. This is your fellowship. This is your community. I don't have any idea what you should do or where you should go or how you should get there. I sense that each of you might have some inklings. And of course, being UUs, some of your inklings point one way and others point another. What I do know is that as you're each standing next to each other, gazing off in different directions, it's very easy to lose sight of the person that you chose to join together with on this journey in the first place. This coming Wednesday will mark the 60th anniversary of the merger of the Unitarian and Universalist faiths. I can't imagine the struggle our ancestors must have had to undertake to get us where we are today. Two groups of people whose personal identities had become intertwined with the shared meaning that had evolved to the point about what it meant to be a Unitarian in the world, or what it meant to be a Universalist in the world, realizing that their dreams of a brighter tomorrow would be better served by setting aside their perceived differences and choosing to face the next stretch of the trail together. One of the strongest aspects of our chosen faith is that it is considered a living tradition. We believe that revelation is not sealed and that we have been granted through the blessing of an evolved sense of self-awareness and free will, the ability to adapt our beliefs based on an ever expanding understanding of both our individual and collective needs. How do we react when faced with a potentially better idea than the one we currently hold? We have to adapt our process. As Black science fiction writer Octavia Butler penned, "All that you touch, you change. All that you change, changes you."
The only lasting truth is change. God is change. Now, unfortunately, exactly like the word I just used, God, change is scary to us humans. We have evolved and survived in large part based on our ability to recognize patterns and move towards things that protect us and away from things that we think might do us harm. In the course of that evolution within a universe whose only constant is change, we've come to appreciate things that offer us a sense of consistency. Consistency helps us feel safe. From an evolutionary standpoint, however, stagnation is also the path to extinction. So we exist in this constant tension, this yin-yang space between past and present, today and tomorrow, life and death. One role of religion is to help us try to maintain balance while navigating our existence within this tension. This can all be pretty heavy stuff. The ability for us to be able to do this work in any meaningful way requires the intentional creation of a safe space. A space where all perspectives are considered, especially perspectives that have been missing from the discussion up to this point. Those perspectives are the illuminators of our blind spots. If you do end up selecting me as your minister for this next stretch, I can only promise you two things. The first is that I will not come in here with any intention to try to change you. The things you do and the way you do them are foundational to your sense of self. And I would be foolish to think that I could breeze in, no matter how good my training in seminary or my lived experience as a professional in the corporate and nonprofit sectors, and try to convince you that I know any better way. Secondly, I can promise you that change will happen. It is the only constant in this universe. Well, that and gravity and the speed of light, but you know what I mean. I sense there are some of you here that think the direction you're heading is just fine. And others that sense, although you're close, there are a few course corrections that might help you arrive at your destination a bit more safely and easily. This next year, if you decide to hire me as your minister, will be spent recalibrating all of our compasses and our binoculars. I think we all sense that there is rough waters ahead. And I think we all sense that we are better off if we can face the upcoming challenges together. My role, if I'm doing my job well, will be to help you plot your next steps collectively and intentionally so that you can all head more confidently into this next breach. This is the work that I've been trained to do. Question I'm going to keep asking, and the one I encourage you to keep asking your fellow travelers as we all work together to plot our next steps, first in the coffee hour, then in your congregational meeting, and on into the future, is this. What do you see? As you think about your collective future and what we need to do today to arrive there safely together, let us ponder this pivotal question, not just in our own minds, but with an ever-expanding curiosity about the answers emerging for those around us. So I ask, what do you see? Can't wait to hear your answers.
We now have time for discussion, and we have a good crowd today, so it may take me a minute to find your hand, but we will be calling on you if you are interested in speaking, and you can raise your hand either visually or virtually, and I will attempt to call on you as I see you. And Renee, if you would like to help me, I may miss hands.
Everyone's uncommonly silent.
What have I done? sometimes it's not bad to leave people speechless, and sometimes it's, I don't know, let's see what happens.
So I first call on Randy Converse, and then I see Robin Proud next, and then Ann Pryor. And please do remember to unmute yourself and then mute again after you've spoken.
Hi, Matt. Thanks for your thoughtful presentation. My question is a bit off the linear here. I'm curious if your thoughts about your story, The Invisible String, have some Buddhist tendencies or loving kindness meditation tendencies.
I came across that story looking for something else. And I think for me, I selected it just because it was a gentle and untriggering way to add some sort of thought about something invisible, or you know, something that had some connection to something beyond just the tangible thing in our heads about facts and figures that I think we can sometimes get connected to. And so it probably has roots in a lot of different traditions, but really I was just trying to find a safe way to inject something of a bit of mystery into our time together today.
Robin.
Well, this is kind of a comment about the future of our group or maybe other groups, that the surveys show that the biggest growth in religions is people declaring themselves none. And there was some, I think, a conservative columnist recently writing about what a shame it was that religion was declining and how young people valued, I guess, authenticity or something. They were not willing to go to a church and pretend to follow something in order to have that community. And I've never been behind proselytizing, but we're still a well-kept secret. And I guess that's something I think having a minister might help us be more visible, both locally and beyond, that there are still many, many people who somehow come here and say, I never heard of this before. And don't know what we have, which is a niche where you can have this community without some of the things that have driven people away from other churches.
I have had the privilege of being invited into many different spaces, BIPOC spaces, LGBTQ spaces, younger people spaces. And there are a lot of conversations going on in a lot of different spaces that sound very similar to the conversations that we are trying to be a container for here in this faith tradition. I love that Stacey Abrams has agreed to be the WARE lecturer this year at GA. And that, I'm sure that she gets all kinds of calls from all different kinds of places to speak. And I don't think that there's any accident that a person like that with her focus in this world has decided to choose to share her talents with the Unitarian Universalist faith because of the intentional conversations that are happening within our faith about what we need to do to remain relevant and to invite more people in and to create a safer space for this work, which is vitally important in our times today. And many people seem to be seeking. And as you said, not everyone's aware that we're here. So I think y'all have laid a great groundwork to begin to create, to invite more people into the space. And our youth are bombarded with options of how they might connect to some of these things. And I think we part of our evolution is going to be to figure out how to continue to connect and remain relevant in the future. That's a really good insight.
Anne, you can go ahead.
Okay. Matt, you use the term collective good and that idea of the common good, the commonwealth, is one of my favorite ideas. And I think that your overall talk spoke really well to what you see as that common good, especially for a congregation like ours. So my comment is more a comment that that phrase is very meaningful for me. But if you want to, you know, use this opportunity to say anything additional about the common good for UU society like ours, that would be that'd be great.
One of the realities that is becoming more and more clear in its focus is that the common good of which many of us aspire and many of which many of us benefit from has not been completely common. It has, there has been people that look like me have benefited from this work towards the common good. And the further afield you look from, I mean, let's face it, I inhabit all of the privileges. I embody all of that. Again, I have had the privilege in the last couple of months. I picked up a contract. I was recruited to be a contract HR consultant in this. What I've come to learn is one of the most revolutionary, beautiful, amazing nonprofits I've ever had the opportunity to be a part of. And it is a primarily BIPOC space. It's majority people of color, people of other marginalized identities. And in addition to their mission of supporting youth in foster care, I think a bigger part of their DNA is around being the change that they want to see in the world. And the way that organization approaches everything leaves no doubt to anybody that enters into its space of how they see that work unfolding. And one of the reasons that the word safety kept coming up in my talk today was that is primarily for folks that have been marginalized by our society over the past decades and centuries. The biggest need I hear over and over and over again is the need for space. Safety. Let's face it, 40 years ago, if your identity was anywhere on the LGBTQ list, it was not safe for you to be who you felt that you were. And although we've taken steps to, and it's, I think primarily in this faith, I think we've done a good job of trying to create those safer spaces. Folks in that community still do not have ultimate safety to just like, oh, I want to go on a vacation here. No, I can't go on a vacation there because it would not be safe for me and my same-sex partner to show up in that space. We like to think that we've raised up the common good, and in many cases we have, but there's so much work left to do. Race is still an enormous issue in this country. And no matter how, you know, good we profess to be and how safe a place that we profess that Unitarian Universalism may or may not be, if you have if the face of safety or the face of danger that you have seen and your ancestors have seen for the last centuries has all been white, you can't just say, well, we're good people, come on over here and we'll welcome you in. You've got to do everything, every single thing you do, every single interaction you have has to demonstrate your commitment, your understanding of the pains that have happened to people that don't look like your community, and demonstrate the actions that you are taking to make sure that your community is working to become a place where more and more people can feel safe. That is the work of our time, if nothing else. That's my thought on that.
And I see Aaron's hand, and then after that, either Mary or Patty.
Hi, Matt. Good to see you again.
Good to see you again.
I was struck by the fact that when this, you know, the Zoom situation is different than a Sunday morning, but it had something similar in that we usually incorporate, and I think we're still going to, this discussion portion in the space of the right after the sermon during the service. And often there are a few beats. There's quiet because people haven't been thinking of their question. They've been listening to the program. And so I think it's important to wait a few beats to see if questions emerge. But I'm also curious how you feel about that discussion portion in the sermon, because right after the sermon during the program, because some ministers have not experienced that other places, and it makes them a little nervous, et cetera. So I'm just wondering what your reaction was when you learned that that's how we operate.
Great question. It is, I would echo that. It's not something that I've seen in the past. I've heard tell of fellowships that have had such a thing. And based on your history and how you emerged and who you are and who you were and who you are, it's not surprising. It doesn't scare me in the least. I know who I am, and I know what my thoughts are, and I trust that nobody here is going to be shy. There are things about a structure like that, which, and again, I don't know if these conversations have had, but there are things about a structure like that which can be beneficial, and then there are also things that can create risk. So, for example, how is someone with a marginalized identity protected from somebody just unexpectedly thinking off, spouting off a question or making a statement that without having been thoughtful or mindful or educated about such things, commits a microaggression or a major aggression or says something that creates pain for somebody. How do you ensure that it's not just the loudest, strongest, most confident voices that are heard, but how do you ensure that all of the perspectives are brought into the conversation? So as I said, my initial thoughts, my initial roles, or my initial ideas about things, I don't think really matter much. I need to get in and ask you questions like these about the things that you have in place, and then hold up some questionings and some wonderings to you, and hold up a mirror and say, this is what you're doing. This is what I see. This is some of the things you might consider. These are some of the strengths. These are some of the things you might want to, you might consider. And then again, it's your community. It's your place. I can tell you what I know from training and what I know from experience may or may not be positive or negative outcomes from any choice that you make. But at the end of the day, y'all are going to make the decisions that you make. So I'm enjoying this conversation for now, and we'll see what happens.
And I think it was Mary Mullen.
Right. I didn't have my cursor on the let me talk button. Anyway, I'm not sure that everyone in our congregation knows what BIPOC means. So I would I'm sure we all know what GLBT means, Q, you know, and adding Q. But BIPOC is a little bit newer. And then both in meeting you last week in person, and today you mentioned an organization that you're working with that's primarily or more than 50% people of color, indigenous, whatever. Yeah. And I wonder if you can name that organization. So two things.
Sure. Always great reminders of this is part of what it means to be more inclusive, is to never assume and to make sure we make clear what things are. So BIPOC stands for Black, Indigenous, and People of Color. It's you know, become one of the ways that trying to assign labels to groups of people, which is, you know, fraught in and of its own right. But yeah, so that's what that means: Black, Indigenous, and People of Color. And the organization is it's based in Seattle, which is where I was living. And all just oddly, I moved to Milwaukee and I got a call out of the blue. The organization is called Treehouse. They have a very lofty and hopefully attainable goal of supporting youth in the foster care system to achieve graduation rates at the same level of folks not in the foster care unit and foster care system. And when they started on this goal, it was, I think it was 50% versus 90%. That was the gap. And I think they've already closed it to almost 70%. Like they're starting to get a ton of funding from state and federal government because their outcomes are proving, or their methods are proving to lead to outcomes that are measurable.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's a great question.
And I see Morris.
Thank you.
Hi, Morris.
It's a pleasure to see you again. In our online discussion, you described yourself as originally a humanist Buddhist, and now you're looking at yourself as being a religious naturalist, if I've got it correct. Could you explain a little bit and expound on the religious humanism concept?
Sure. I think, as many here know, humanism sort of emerged, in the 30s and 40s as a reaction to some of the human travesty that was witnessed in World War II, and an attempt was made to consider like humans as the source of their as the source of so many potential outcomes for both good and evil, and an attempt to try to codify how then we should choose to be in this world, given all those things. And what has happened over that time, and this is one of the things that this Unitarian Universalist faith tradition wrestles with, is that there's been a large scale move away from anything that can't be measured, that's not science based. And there is a sense, and there is a longing, and I heard some of this in the conversations that I had. There's a longing for that, whatever you want to call it, but that connection to something larger, that sense of spirituality that reminds us that although we can think and use our brains, like there's more to us that there's more to being human than just like what we think and how we act. And that we can strengthen ourselves through remembering that we're connected to something larger. Religious naturalism, I think what I'm starting to see, what I started to see in seminary, what I'm starting to see from authors emerging, is a repositioning of the human animal within the larger context of nature. Many of the same thought processes, but a remembering that we are not the center of the universe, that we are just one part of a very interdependent web, and that we can actually learn a lot and inform our human relations by looking at the structures of the natural world. You see Black authors like Adrienne Marie Brown reminding us about the fractal nature of nature, the idea that the large imitates the small, and that each thing that we do in our individual selves and in a larger community actually does have potential to expand out to the entire environment that we're part of. You see the lack of just the beautiful mechanisms with which nature has evolved to sustain itself and to keep itself balanced. Lots of lessons to be pulled from there and added into our thought process around what it means to be human in this world. So that's a high level, quick thought about that.
That will have to be our last question today. So thank you, Matt. We appreciated tremendously your presentation today. And our closing words today are, "The purpose of this community is to help its people grow," by Eric Walker Wickstrom, and Margaret will be reading.
If you are who you were, and if the person next to you is who he or she was, if none of us has changed since the day we came in here, we have failed. The purpose of this community, of any church, temple, zendo, mosque, is to help its people grow. We do this through encounters with the unknown in ourselves, in one another, in the other, whoever that might be for us, however hard that might be, because these encounters have many gifts to offer. So may you go forth from here this morning, not who you were, but who you could be. So may we all.
Blessed be. Our closing